Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, July 8th. I'm Samantha Simmons. Time to talk cart maintenance and repair with Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your calls at 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. This is a popular show, so get those calls in sooner rather than later. You can also email us your questions at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 1-800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke and your car calls coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Samantha Simmons. On the program to answer your automotive maintenance and repair questions today is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years. Gordon Fricke, welcome back to Vox Pop.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
The number to call with your questions is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. All right. Let's get this started.
All right. You want to do some emails?
Yeah. Let's do an email.
Are you able to get them on your phone?
I got them on my phone.
All right.
This one's from Jeffrey, who says, I have a 2019 Kia Sorento LX with 143,000 miles. Do you recommend getting an extended warranty? And if so, what should I look into for the warranty?
Well, that's a tough question. So extended warranties became really popular. They started out in the late 80s, early 90s, and they've gained a lot of strength because of the complexity of cars and how expensive cars are to fix now. However, there are so many companies out there, and I think all of us get bombarded at some point with extended warranties, either in the mail, messaging, ads popping up left and right, phone calls, your car is nearing the end of its warranty, do you want to buy one? But my advice is to make sure it's a strong, reputable company, not somebody that just popped up and is selling warranties. Try to get a company that is that has insurance backing. In the event that they fail, there's a backer behind them other than them just going out of business and your warranty's gone. And read it carefully to find out what's really covered and what really is not.
Is there anything you should be more concerned about being covered than not? Like, so I'm sure they throw in a bunch of floofy stuff that you
yes.
don't really need covered.
Yeah, exactly right. The list will talk about things that sound really great to have covered, but a lot of those things never fail. But it sounds great to have, you know, things covered that just aren't going to be part of your normal problem. Diagnostic fees, that was a big item that was never covered. We'll pay for the repair, we'll pay for the part, subject to a deductible, and maybe we won't pay all of the labor, but they never paid diagnostic fees. That's one to keep in mind. And where are they going to source? Are they going to allow the repair shop to use the parts they normally supply, or do they ship them to the repair shop? Because repair shops hate getting parts brought to them from an outside source.
All right, let's take a call from Bob in Albany. Hi, Bob.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yep.
So I have an unusual problem. I have a 2018 Honda Civic, and when I pull out of the garage in the morning, the air conditioning works just great. But if I park out in the hot sun and the car gets really, really hot, I only get cold air on the passenger side. The driver's side vents blow hot air, and it takes 5 miles of driving before it cools down.
So does your car have dual zone heating and cooling? Do you have dials for the left and right side of the car?
Absolutely not.
Okay. If it did, it'd be an easier answer because there's a independent blend doors that adjust the temperature for the driver and the passenger. If it's only affecting one side of the vehicle, but it's a single control system, there could be an obstruction in the evaporator, leaves or something that got in there, and or a flap problem. And these flaps are the things that direct the air to the windshield, to the floor, to the center vents. So when you started up first part of the day, is it absolutely working perfectly, beautifully cold on both sides?
Cold air from both sides as long as it's been in the garage. It's not overheated.
Yeah. As soon as you, so you could have, there could be a sticking door or a flap in the system, which is not generally easy to get to. It's going to have to go to a shop, and they're going to look at a diagram to see where the controls are. Because even though you have a single temperature control, that system may have individual blend doors with the possibility of it getting dual climate on other models, so they just build one box to fit all the cars. So I think it's got to go.
Sounds like an expensive proposition.
It can be, but some of these blend air door actuators or motors, some of them are pretty easy to get to and not very expensive, but you don't know till you're there. So I think you're going to have to get it in, diagnosed and then see what they tell you. Hopefully they can solve it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Bob. The number to call with your questions is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take another question from Cole in Queensbury. Hi, Cole.
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question is about oil changes and deciding what grade of oil to get when you're getting an oil change. I typically go to the same chain of instant oil change, and they offer a few different grades of oil. So I'm curious to know how you should decide what grade of oil to get when you get an oil change.
Sure. So when you're talking about grade, are you talking about synthetic versus blend versus conventional, or are you talking weights?
I'm talking about, they typically offer like different price points. I guess it can be whether it's conventional or synthetic, but just like what level of price
sure.
point oil to go for, depending on
right. What factors. Is what kind of vehicle are you driving?
I have a 2012 Honda Civic with about 126,000 on it.
So a 12 Civic probably calls for a 0W20 motor oil. Does that sound like something they've been talking to you about?
Yes, that's what I get.
Yeah. So that is a full synthetic oil because of the weight. I don't believe any conventional oils got into those weights. That's a kind of a what you'd think of as a newer weight of motor oil. It's very, very common nowadays. In the muscle car world, that would be considered incredibly thin oil, watery oil. So my advice is to, and the problem with the fast lube places is they're upselling, and if it's 0W20 full synthetic, I don't know if they're offering you different brands, different qualities, but you should not skimp on the quality of the motor oil. It's what keeps your engine alive. So I would maybe be a little inquisitive to say, well, this is full synthetic. What are you telling me about these different options? What are the upsides to it? And just be a little careful that maybe it's just a pricing upsell. But the weight is what's important to stick with as to what the manufacturer recommended for the engine, and that's what you're using. The next question is what brand or what quality level. So I would always advise the highest quality, if that helped you in that question.
Yeah, definitely. And I know most typically recommend like every 3,000 miles. How many miles or how much time would you typically recommend between oil changes?
Yeah, that's changed.
That seems a little short.
Yeah, that's changed a lot over the years. And, decades and decades ago, with conventional motor oil, old school engines, carbureted engines, very inefficient. The oil got diluted and contaminated very quickly. It used to be 3,000 miles, 3 months, roughly. Today, engines are better. Oils are better. Everything is more efficient. It took me a while to come to grips with, yes, we can go 5,000 miles very easily on top quality oil, top quality filters. unless your car is being driven like a taxi or a police car where it's idling all day and you know, just under terrible conditions. Your car has a little percentage system that tells you when they think it's time to change it. And it's kind of a smart system. It's using different parameters to come up with that percentage. And I think Honda always said, don't ever let it get below 15%. What I find, though, sometimes is that percentage meter is winding you up into some serious mileage. I've seen 8, 10,000 miles. It's really, that's really too much. So what I'm thinking, and a lot of lube guys, and you'll see a lot of these guys on YouTube and you know, the real gurus, 5,000 miles is a pretty safe area to be in today.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
You got
Thanks,
it.
Cole. And with that, we're going to take a quick break. Welcome back to Vox Pop. We're here with Gordon Fricke to talk your automotive maintenance and repair. The number to call with questions is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. We got some calls on the line, but we're going to go to an email first here. Aaron says they have the 15A fuse for the taillights and dash lights blew twice in 6 months on my 04 Honda Odyssey. I replaced it with a 20A fuse, and it seems to be holding. Can I continue to get away with this? That's Aaron from Greenfield.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's a little bit touchy when you put a heavier fuse in place of what the factory designed. So something apparently in that circuit's drawing a little bit more than it should. If one fuse blows and you replace it and you're good, it's a tired fuse, and fuses do get worn out. You know, they're carrying the current and they're made to pop at a certain amount. I'm guessing that he blew the second 15 amp and then went to the 20. Is that what that email
said?
Sounds
like, yeah.
You know, you shouldn't recommend putting heavier fuses in it, but I guess he's put a 20 amp in and it's been holding this whole time. The 20 would still blow before the car burned down. So I guess he's okay. If the 20 fails, it's time to get it looked at to see if there's an issue with the connector, the socket. Maybe there's a wire that is rubbed or chafed somewhere. So I would just say cautiously, yeah, I guess so.
All right. Let's take a question. Let's go to Mike in Utica. Hi, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Oh, yes, I am. Good
Hi.
Afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Gordon, it sounds like today could be Honda Day. So I've got a 2018 Honda Accord with about 110,000 miles on it. And it periodically, over the last couple of weeks, has just started showing some dash lights that come on while driving. And in the worst-case scenario, seemingly every light comes on all at once while I'm driving it. And the speedometer will drop to zero. What's going on?
Yeah. So has that been the pattern, or have you had individual lights coming on prior to this complete cluster?
So we have had individual ABSs come on, tire pressure sensor monitor has come on, check engine light once in a while, and then all of a sudden, like I said, they all came on.
Yeah. When everything failed and the speedometer read zero, did the car behave normally or did it drive differently?
There was reduced performance.
Yeah. What you need to do is get it scanned to see what's going on there with diagnostic trouble codes. It could be a vehicle speed sensor because of the speedometer failing, and that is derived in some cars They use a sensor on the transmission measuring the speed of the output shaft. Other cars, and a lot of cars today, they're just purely relying on the wheel speed sensors, and sometimes they just pick one. So let's say the car picked the right rear wheel to be the wheel that not only supplies the ABS system, but it also feeds the computer for speedometer. I've seen those sensors fail and do that, and then the car doesn't drive properly because the computer has totally lost track of the speed, so it's not sure what to do with the shifting of the transmission and a whole bunch of other engine management. Because of the complexity of cars today, it's got to be plugged in like everything is today. It may boil down to just one thing. You might have a speed sensor issue. It may not be that big of a problem.
If it's a sensor on the wheel, does each wheel carry a sensor?
Yeah. Each wheel's got a sensor. And I don't know how that car's wired, but like I said, some cars only relied on one of them. They grabbed that one wheel speed to use as a speedometer reference, and that would cause you to have an ABS code, a traction code, and lose your speedometer.
Gotcha.
And that'll also trigger the check engine light because they when you get one failure, it's like sympathetic pain, right? Your one tooth hurts, and then you feel like a whole bunch of them are hurting, and that's what happens. Other lights they seem to help out. You know, I'll turn on two. You know,
absolutely. Yes. Yeah. Awesome. Very good. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Mike. All right, let's go to Douglas in Barrytown, New York. Hi, Douglas.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call. I have a 2007 Highlander. Toyota Highlander, and I bought it used at 95,000, and now has 160. And I've never changed the transmission fluid, and I'm thinking about doing it now. I'd like this car to last like a good 200,000 Toyota would. But I've seen some things online that have cautioned to just drain and fill rather than drop the pan and change the filter, that, you know, if you've waited this long, that could somehow be detrimental. So I'm looking for advice about the drain and fill or.
Yeah. There is truth to that theory of, if the miles are way too high, don't shock the transmission with a total flush, and or dropping the pan and changing the filter is not a big deal because you don't get all the fluid out. You're going to lose, I don't know,
right,
on a vehicle, 4, 5 quarts, maybe 6, I don't know. Holds probably 10 or 12.
Yeah.
So I think Toyota probably was drain and refill at certain intervals, and you're not getting all of the fluid out. So if I were to do anything with this one, I would consult with a repair shop about what you've just asked me. And I think most would say we would recommend drain and refill. And if the fluid is really, really dark and really bad, do that a few times. I remember years ago, Audi had a procedure where if the fluid was very dark and didn't look good, they would say do like 3 drain and refills in a row.
Right.
Drain it, fill it, run it, drain it, fill it, run it, and do that 3 or 4 times rather than totally shocking it. So I think that's probably the game plan you should pick with that vehicle.
Yeah. And by drain and fill, do you mean changing the filter also or not?
Well, you can, because that's not going to shock anything, because you're still only getting
you're still only getting
the same amount of fluid out, whether you take the, if that has a drain plug. Now, some cars don't even have serviceable filters. I'm not sure if that vehicle does. If it does not have a serviceable filter, that question is answered. You just drain and refill it.
Right. Right.
But your shop will find that out easy enough.
I see. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thanks. Got some emails piling up
here. Oh, boy.
Anonymous in Massachusetts says, I have a 2008 Honda Element with 225,000 miles on it. The dashboard malfunction indicator just turned on, but I'm 100 miles from home. I notice when I start driving, as I get about 20 miles per hour, the car bucks like the only manual cars used, the old manual cars used to. If you didn't shift correctly, I let off the gas and can drive normally. Any advice?
Well, so the general rule with a check engine light is, and it's there primarily for an emissions flag. If the check engine light comes on, the vehicle could be polluting, and it could be for a variety of reasons, 100 reasons. If the light is flashing, you usually have a drivability problem. The car runs terrible, and the light's flashing saying, hey, you know, it's misfiring, or this is bad, it's polluting like crazy. In the case of this Element, if Anonymous accelerates too far, too hard, it doesn't run right. I guess if you were to keep it below that little fitful piece of driving and it runs very normally and the light's not flashing and no red lights are on, I think it's probably okay to get home easy on and then get it checked where you normally get your car serviced. But red lights definitely should not be ignored. They need to be addressed. Pull over right away, shut the engine off. If you don't know what the signal, what the indicator is, look in the owner's manual or search it on your phone, because over the years I have had so many engines get destroyed by the red oil light comes on. And the driver said, oh, geez, I guess I better get to the nearest place to get oil, and that's 70 miles away. And the engine seizes, and it's on a tow truck. And then it's like, you know, 10 grand. So that's what I would caution on.
Is there a difference in the quality of oil you, like, I would pick up at, you know, some automotive store, you know, where I'm going to pick up windshield wipers, or versus like what you use?
Well, no, not really. There's a handful of brands out there, and the big strong brands of oil are kind of like the top tier gas stations. Mm-hmm. They are definitely going to be the higher quality. If the can of oil just says oil, you might want to, unless that's all there is, you might want to go to the name brand. And I'm not trying to sell any brands, but the big, you know, Castrol, Pennzoil, Valvoline, you know, the real strong, they're not going to sell anything that isn't high quality because of their reputation.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll take another email. Let's take a look at it. There are many gas line additives on the market now that claim to clear away the check engine light. Some even say they'll fix your catalytic converter. Do you know if any of these products work, and are they safe for anyone to use in any make or model vehicle? That's from Mark.
Yeah, so snake oil is, you know, one of the common things that people are worried about. You know, you pour this additive in and it doesn't do any good. There are fuel injection cleaners and catalytic converter cleaners that are definitely high quality and can work. And when I say can, they're going to do what they're designed to do, and they can't overhaul fuel injectors or they can't rebuild catalytic converters, but they're there to remove deposits and debris and things that have gotten on these sensors that will coat them and make them not operate properly. So they're harmless in the most cases, and most of them are beneficial. They may not solve the problem. They may not turn that check engine light off for a catalytic converter code, but they will clean your fuel injectors, your pistons, so they're definitely beneficial. Same thing. You need to shop the strong leading brands. Chevron makes a product called Tecron, Lubrimoly or Liquimoly. There are really strong names out there. Again, if you go to a roadside, you know, like a throughway rest stop, and some of those additives are in a stand, they may not be worth pouring in. So you just have to sort through it.
All right. Let's take a call from Diane in Albany. Hi, Diane.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call. Good. Hey, I have a 2025 Honda, and I had a deer decide it was going to commit suicide in front of me. And you know, $17,000 later, I think it's perfect. My car, I'm happy. However, every 2 weeks, the headlight, which is the one where the deer hit, and it's a replacement because that whole front end was kind of messed up. Every 2 weeks, my blinkers, the whole headlight unit, which is like a whole unit, $767 unit, stops working. And the resolution is to pop the hood, plug it and unplug it, and then it starts working again. And I'm wondering, I have an appointment with my regular guy, my regular mechanic, not the body shop.
Right.
For next week. But I'm trying to, I'm wondering if you can give me any insight.
Sure.
So that I know what I'm talking about when I go and say, what's going on,
right.
You know?
So being a 2025 car, do you know if all of the parts that were used as replacements were genuine Honda? Did you say it was a Honda?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was my first thought. And the first time it happened, I did go to the dealer. And he said, well, it looks like it was all done correctly. And I have a list. It's 6 pages long of all the parts they replaced.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the concern on collision work, particularly after the car is beyond, I think it's a year now, the insurance company in page 4002 of your insurance policy will state that... It will state that they have the option to use like, kind, and quality parts, which is a really neat term for non-genuine. So you might be getting aftermarket headlights, aftermarket fenders, and bumper covers. And sometimes they come from suppliers that don't have the quality standards that, in your case, Honda did. And with electronics and lamps and stuff like that, that's where the deficiencies sometimes show up. I would be
okay.
What I would do is
it's not 1 year old, it's like 7 months.
Yeah, so I've got to believe that they're probably all 100% Honda. I think what I would do is go through that receipt that you got and find the headlight see what that part number is, and you can search that part number on the internet, and it'll come up, and it'll tell you what it is.
Okay.
I would just want to be sure that the headlight that you're having trouble with is a genuine Honda, and if it is, and if it's a defect, the body shop that replaced it will be able to address that for you. Was it a Honda body shop? I mean, was it a dealer-owned shop, or did you take it to just a collision center?
I took it to the one that my insurance company said this is the one that we work with.
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes that's not always that's sometimes that's good for the insurance company and not so good for the owner of the car. But we could talk we could have a whole show on that, and I'd probably get so frustrated they'd kick me out of the radio station. But anyway, I would just be sure that was all genuine Honda, and then I think you should direct it back to the repair shop that did the repair work and indicate that you've unplugged it and plugged it in and that restores it for a while. It's probably a bad headlight. They're probably going to have to replace the unit because there's electronics in there, and being a 2025 Honda, I'm sure you have LED lighting, and there are components in that headlight. $750 doesn't sound very expensive to me for a genuine headlight, though. That's the other thing, but it could be.
Oh, okay.
So just follow up with
I thought that was a lot of money.
I've seen them up to $1,500 to $2,000, depending on the car, which is insane. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So that's what
I
would do.
I will do that. I'll check that list before I go to my guy next week and take it from there.
Sounds good.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Diane. The number to call with your questions is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us your questions at voxpop@wamc.org. We're going to take a quick break. Welcome back to Vox Pop. We're talking cars with Gordon Fricke. The number to call with your questions is 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's take a call from Richard in Whitesboro. Hi, Richard.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Great show. I really love them.
Thank you.
I have a question about my wife's old 3 Avalon, low mileage. It had a blown windshield motor, and then they fixed that, and they checked the linkage and stuff, and the new one blew a fuse. And like I say, they don't know what's causing it, and it's dangerous because it can pop out and when you're in a rainstorm. The one thing a little different about it is the gel water sensor on the windshield. We have to punch that or hit that occasionally to work in the low speed. That's happened when they changed the windshield wiper. They didn't windshield, and they didn't transfer the switch right. So I was wondering if you had any hints. They did check the linkage. I don't know if there's a codes would help on it. They didn't mention that.
Yeah. And, it's too basic of that car's older to the point where there aren't modules that are going to probably read into the windshield wiper motor. But you said you said the windshield wiper motor was replaced.
Yep.
And was it blowing fuses prior, or is this something that occurred after changing it?
No, it blew the motor. And they put it in, and just shortly after it blew a fuse.
So you never had any fuse issues until the wiper motor got replaced. Is that what you're saying?
Right. That's right.
So I would be suspicious of the replacement part. It could be, and it's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if that was a remanufactured wiper motor. I mean, maybe not. Maybe it was new, but if it was a remanufactured wiper motor, there could be a problem with it that didn't get resolved when they fixed it or remanufactured it, and it's creating too much of a current draw. If you said, I've been having fuse blowing issues, and we've changed the wiper motor to resolve that and it didn't fix it, we'd look elsewhere in the circuit. But if that's a new problem with the wiper motor, I'd be suspicious that it is a defective replacement. And really, you can do current draw tests. You know, you could get on there with an amp probe and see if it's drawing too much. And let's say it's a, I don't know, let's say it's a 20 amp fuse, and you test the circuit, and the circuit's drawing, you know, 18 or 17 or whatever. That's pushing the limits of the fuse. That would be too much, and you would replace it. Or you warranty the wiper motor and replace it and see how it goes after that. But it'd be nice to see what the amp draw was before and after. But I'd be very suspicious of that. And that's based on your saying that the shop did confirm that the linkage was not binding and creating massive drag on the wiper motor. So that'd be the second thing to check.
Oh, yeah. How about the relays in them? Is that they go?
Well, yeah, but they're not going to generally cause excessive amp draws. They're just completing circuits. They're pretty basic on that car. So I would have the shop do an amp draw test on the feed to that wiper motor and see how much it's drawing, and then that'll tell you or tell them.
Can I ask you a quick question on hybrids versus a regular? I was going to buy, just a quick opinion, buy a Highlander. And how about the her maintenance an issue or nuisance or anything?
Not really. I mean, Toyota's really got the handle on hybrids ahead of everyone. They've got tons of experience with them, so they're very, very trustworthy and durable. The thing to do is see what the type of driving you're going to be doing and see if that hybrid makes sense to you. Because in some cases, you don't really save much of anything based on how you drive. Some people will buy a hybrid and say, I'm not saving anything because of the way I operate the vehicle. So I would do a little study on buying hybrid versus a regular gas and see if it makes sense to you.
Okay,
but I wouldn't be afraid of the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks.
I appreciate it a lot.
The driving the car differently versus, you know, how much your, you know, gas you're getting out of it is so real. My brother and I drive the same car but a year apart, and he gets way less because he just like is a speed demon.
Yep,
so
it's a big difference.
Yeah, I was driving his car the other day and I was like, you could get better gas mileage. Like, I got it in like 2 miles versus his like 400.
Sure.
All right, let's go to Bob in Schenectady. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a question. I got a 2025 Subaru. And I went in for my first oil change to a place I had a lot of faith in. I never had a problem with them. And I didn't pay attention to the bill I paid for it. I went home and I looked at it. It was $20 more than it has been before. So I called them and they said, oh, we put an additive in, MOA. We put that in now to increase the, you know, the life of your motor. I said, wait a minute, I got a Subaru. It has 3,000 miles on it. First oil change. I don't need to have anything like that. And you didn't tell me about it. They never told me they were going to put it in. They just put it in there and charged me for it. And I found out they got a new service manager, and I guess she's trying to prop up business or make, you know, make her resume look good better than the other guy that was there before or something. I don't know. But what kind of an effect can that have on the oil of a car? This stuff is called MOA. I looked it up. The guy has a whole array of products that he sells to dealerships and gets them to sign in for these programs where they supposedly tell the people that come in for oil changes, you know, you're going to have another insurance policy on your car. So if something goes wrong within 100,000 miles, you know, we'll pay for it, whatever happens. And they put it in any of the fluids that are changed and everything. I don't really want any of that stuff in there. Yeah. I don't think, you know, they use Subaru oil, supposedly. Like you said before, I just heard you a few minutes ago, good oil is good oil, you know. Why would you need to put something in there like that? So I don't know. I just thought I'd ask you what you thought about something like that.
Right. It sounds to me like it's a bit of an upsell. And
yeah.
if you talk to Subaru in your case or any auto manufacturer,
yeah,
they very seldom ever recommend any additives of any sort. If they do, it's an additive that they have thoroughly researched and are authorizing for use in their vehicles.
Yeah, exactly.
What you're saying is correct. It's a brand new vehicle. You brought it in for your first service. I don't think you really needed that additive, and I don't recognize the brand.
Higher
mileage, you start to maybe benefit from additives on looser engines. They're consuming some oil,
right.
You know, and then once in a while, the manufacturer will find out that their specs of oil were lacking, and they'll update that midstream. GM just did that with some V8 engines. They've upped their oil to a 040 instead of a 020. Anyway, the shop should have asked you first if you were interested in having that added, and then you'd say, I don't think so. Yeah. The car's brand new. Let's not do it. So they shouldn't have just poured it in without asking you. So that was bad.
Exactly.
And I don't think your Subaru needs it, to be honest with you, if you service
that thing
regularly, you know?
Yeah. I don't know what to do if I should go back there again. I said, look, I'm bringing my car in again, make an appointment. You're going to give me another oil change and put clean oil in and get the junk out of there and with a new filter, which they did. And, you know, every time I got to go in there, I'm going to say, well, what do you have now, you know, to put in my car that I don't want? You know, I don't trust them anymore. I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Like I said, they were really good for many years.
Is it a, and don't mention names, but is it a chain? Is it a, you know, is it a national company?
No, it's a dealer. It's a Subaru dealer.
Oh, so it's an additive that the dealer is using. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Yeah, and they're not the only one. There's another one in my area that's using it. I wouldn't go there either. And then this one, you know, like I said, I love this place, and now all of a sudden I got a new service manager, and this happened. So
if you have the time, it would be interesting to contact Subaru and you can contact them via email or probably still by phone and ask they're going to have a customer support system there somewhere or department.
I would ask
that question. Say it's a 2025 car, brand new, full warranty. Does Subaru recognize this additive, and is it okay to put in the vehicle? I'd like to hear their take on it. That's what I would do. not the dealer. Call Subaru of America. Call the manufacturer.
Exactly.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Bob.
I will do that. Thank you.
Go to Maggie in Colony. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. I just bought a 2016 Nissan Rogue, and I'm getting a little concerned about this issue they have with the transmissions, the CVT. So I called the shop where the dealer where I got it, and they said, "Oh, you just come in after 30,000 miles," and we thought he said change the fluid, but I know that on transmissions you don't usually change the transmission fluid, correct?
Yeah, no, there are intervals on transmission fluids. There are a few manufacturers that say no, don't do anything, but Nissan has always had a fluid change interval on their CVTs. That transmission was very, very troublesome early on, extremely troublesome in most all of their models. I think by 16, they had it pretty well solved. Unless you're, how many miles are on the car?
I bought it with 91, and now it's about 92,000.
Yeah. Does it operate normally? Does it feel okay?
You know, I mean, maybe I'm overly aware or something, but every once in a while it seems like it sticks or something. But, I mean, I don't know if it's any different than any other car, to be honest.
Yeah, CVTs are different. They operate differently. They don't shift. They're seamless shifting, and then they decided to put fake shift points in them to make people think they're shifting. But to answer your question, there are fluid change intervals in I don't know if you know the service history of this vehicle, but I would definitely.
A little bit.
Yeah,
I think it was on the Carfax report.
I would definitely service that transmission when recommended for sure.
Yes, definitely. Okay.
All right. Hope that helps you.
Do you have time for another question or?
Well, I'm not running the show.
Yeah, why not? If you make it quick, why not?
Okay. So when I'm driving, I feel a rubbing sensation. So I take my foot off the gas, it goes away. Is that a tire? Now, I thought the tires looked healthy, but when I looked yesterday, and it looks almost like the left front tire, the tread is, wearing down. So I'm thinking, is it out of balance? Is it, do I need an alignment?
You only feel it when you're on the accelerator, on the gas pedal?
Yes.
Second you take your foot off it, the noise is gone.
It's a sensation of rubbing,
You're probably going to have to get that checked. What comes to mind to me would be drive axle related and or maybe drive. Is yours all-wheel drive?
I think so.
Most Rogues were.
I'm not positive.
I think they were, drive shaft related, drive axle related, but that's something that's got to be experienced by a tech and then diagnosed. So I would just keep. Keep aware. Be aware of that. If it changes or gets worse, I would get it looked at. Maybe at the same time you get the fluid changed.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks, Maggie. We'll go to Dean and Ransley. I got a couple more calls. So, hi, Dean.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Yes, I'm here.
All right. What's your question?
I have a 2003 Ford Explorer Sports Track with 87,000 miles on it. And when I drive it when it's hot and I stop someplace, sometimes it won't start. It sputters, but it won't take hold. Have any ideas what that could be?
So it cranks and cranks and cranks and cranks, spins over, but it won't start.
Correct.
Once it does start, how does it sound or act?
Well, a lot of times I have to wait like maybe an hour or so, and then it may start and it's just fine.
Starts as if there was never a problem?
Correct.
And when you're saying hot, like super hot, like it's been lately?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you get real hot weather, and yeah. I've been driving it for a while, the engine's probably hot, and say I go to the supermarket and I come back out, I can't get it to start.
There could be a variety of causes, particularly with the age of the vehicle.
It's never had plugs or wires.
Generally, that is not going to cause a total failure to start after cranking, and then it cools off and does start. It could be an electronic component, but you said it never fails you or runs poorly. It just won't start sometimes after it sits hot.
Correct.
Check engine light on?
Nope.
It's not. So it could. You always need to scan vehicles today for everything, because there could be some codes in the module that are not going to trigger the check engine light but are on the brink of creating problems. It could be a sensor that is being affected by the heat, and once it hot soaks or heat soaks when you sit, it pushes it past the brink of not operating. We used to see a lot of that with crankshaft position sensors and cam sensors and early on some ignition modules. Absolutely died in the heat. But that's going to be a tough one to speculate on, and it's going to be tough for the shop, because you may bring it to the shop, it's not hot enough, and absolutely can't reproduce the problem. But first step
Correct.
Is always the first step is always to plug it in, do a full scan, and just read the codes and data. Just see if anything looks wacky, and take it from there.
Okay, yeah, I've had it to a shop, and they can't find anything.
I'm sure. I know the feeling, because it has to be dead when they go to try to start it to find out what's lacking at
right.
that moment.
Right.
So, yeah, that could be a little difficult of a problem to solve.
Yep. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks. In our last email here, we got about a minute and a half left. They have a 2022 Winnebago RV. They don't drive it that often, and their local Ram dealer says that they only need to get the oil changed once a year, and that's what the service rep says. Do you think that's okay?
That's a pretty good, basically, on very low usage vehicles, the general rule is to do it once a year, unless it really has had virtually no driving, no use, and it's been stored okay. I have some vehicles that I don't use often, and I won't change the oil every year. But I'm being very aware of how many miles were put on it, how clean the oil looks, you know, where it's been stored. So, I mean, you really could go longer than that, but the default is once a year. So that's not bad advice.
Does the climate have anything to do with that? Would you have to change it more depending on climate?
If it's sitting, temperature fluctuations cause condensation, so the answer kind of is yes, yeah. Yep.
All right. We are just about out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those I left on the line and in the inbox. I'd also like to thank our guest, Gordon Fricke, for stopping by today. Support for WAMC comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang and Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington. Helping gardeners grow flowering shrubs, hydrangea, ninebark, rose of Sharon, and sweet pepper bushes. WardsNursery.com. Thanks again for joining us today on Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Ed Rosen took your calls. I'm Samantha Simmons. Tomorrow, Tony Yang will be here to take your computer and tech questions. That's tomorrow at Tuned 2. Stay tuned now for the book show.